This morning's Hebrew Bible reading is Psalm 109, and Damon and I are going to take turns reading it. Do not be silent, O God of my praise, for wicked and deceitful mouths are opened against me, speaking against me with lying tongues. They beset me with words of hate and attack me without cause. In return for my love, they accuse me, even while I make prayer for them. So they reward me evil for good and hatred for my love. They say,
appoint a wicked man against him. Let an accuser stand on his right. When he is tried, let him be found guilty. Let his prayer be counted as sin. May his days be few. May another seize his position. May his children be orphaned and his wife a widow. May his children wander about and beg. May they be driven out of the ruins they inhabit. May the creditor seize all that he has. May strangers plunder the fruits of his toil. May there be no one to do him a kindness, nor anyone to pity his orphaned children. May his posterity be cut off. May his name be blotted out in the second generation. May the iniquity of his father be remembered before the Lord, and do not let the sin of his mother be blotted out. Let them be before the Lord continually, and may his memory be cut off from the earth. For he did not remember to show kindness, but pursued the poor and needy and the brokenhearted to their death. He loved to curse. Let curses come to him. He did not like blessing. May it be far from him. He clothed himself with cursing as his coat. May it soak into his body like water, like oil into his bones. May it be like a garment that he wraps around himself, like a belt that he wears every day.
May that be the reward of my accusers from the Lord, of those who speak evil against my life. But you, O Lord, my Lord, act on my behalf for your name's sake, because your steadfast love is good, deliver me. For I am poor and needy, and my heart is pierced within me. I am gone like a shadow at evening. I am shaken off like a locust. My knees are weak through fasting. My body has become gaunt. I am an object of scorn to my accusers. When they see me, they shake their heads. Help me, O Lord my God. Save me according to your steadfast love. Let them know that this is your hand. You, O Lord, have done it. Let them curse, but you will bless. Let my assailants be put to shame. May your servant be glad. May my accusers be clothed with dishonor. May they be wrapped in their own shame as a mantle. With my mouth, I will give great thanks to the Lord. I will praise God in the midst of the throng. For God stands at the right hand of the needy to save them from those who would condemn them to death.
Thank you, Marianne and Damon. Is your hair standing on end after that psalm? Did you know that there was a psalm like that in the Bible? Woo! So that is one kind of anger, and now we're going to read from the gospel about another kind of anger. From the Gospel of Mark, chapter 11, verses 15 through 18. Then Jesus and his disciples came to Jerusalem. And Jesus entered the temple and began to drive out those who were selling and those who were buying in the temple. And he overturned the tables of the money changers and the seats of those who sold doves, and he would not allow anyone to carry any commerce through the temple. He was teaching and saying, "Is it not written, 'My house shall be called a house of prayer for all the nations?' But you have made it a den of robbers." And when the chief priests and the scribes heard it, they kept looking for a way to kill him, for they were afraid of him because the whole crowd was spellbound by his teaching. That reminds me of what John Lewis calls good trouble. Will you pray with me? May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O God, our rock and our Redeemer. Amen. So today we are continuing our sermon series on the stages of grief. Last week was denial, and this week is anger. And we are doing so because we are recognizing that we are in a time of great loss, a loss of normalcy in the pandemic, a loss of dreams and plans and closeness, connectivity that we had taken for granted and which is wearing on us in a daily way. And also the losses that we are facing as a nation as we come to grapple with our legacy and present of racial injustice. So today is anger. Of course, these sermons go in a linear fashion, but the stages of grief, as we talked about last week, are cyclical and kind of spiral. So if you find yourself in this stage of anger, then you might go back into denial. You might go forward into another stage, but we're going to cover them all. And hopefully you will see yourself in some of these along the way. So as I mentioned, we have two really different portraits of anger here. Though they're both concerned with wrongdoing, the first one, the psalm, is personal. It's an individual who is enraged by his enemy's actions and who is bent on violent revenge, although he asks God to handle the details. Thank you very much. The other is public anger directed at dismantling a system that exploited the poor and turned religion into a for-profit business. I think it's so valuable that both of these instances of anger are enshrined in our holy scriptures, along with so many more instances of anger. Anger is a human emotion. It's normal. It's a natural response to wrongdoing, and it can even be a gift if we pay attention to it. More on that in a minute. The Bible is full of prophets' righteous anger over those who abuse their power. It's full of the individual anger of those who have been wronged by their neighbors in the day-to-day course of living. It's full of God's anger when God's people stubbornly refuse to do what is right or willfully ignore divine instructions to care for the vulnerable and treat everyone with equity. As Andy alluded to earlier, we're often taught, at least subconsciously, that there is no place for anger in church. We've somehow been telegraphed the message that church is a place for softer emotions, for going along to get along, and that giving voice to anger would somehow desanctify the holy space and holy community that we inhabit together. But nothing could be farther from the truth. If it's something that we're angry about and we care about, as Andy said, then we need to bring that into this holy space, not stifle it. In society at large, we're taught the same thing. We're schooled to abuse our anger by either shoving it down inside of ourselves or by swallowing and ignoring it, or by letting it explode into violence. In our culture, in particular, women are taught to internalize anger and men are taught to externalize it, neither of which is particularly healthy. Because as Sharon shared during Bible study on Wednesday night, anger is a secondary emotion. It's one that is fueled by hurt. Did you notice in our psalm that the psalmist lets his anger burn hot for a dozen verses before telling God what's really wrong? That he is poor and needy and his heart is pierced within him. That he's gone like a shadow at evening, shaken off like a locust, his knees weak through fasting, his body gaunt. He has become an object of scorn. He is in pain. That's what's really going on underneath all of that aggression and anger. Our anger, even the most volatile anger, is alerting us that something we deeply value has been violated. Or in the context of grief, that something or someone we deeply value has been lost to us. And so our anger isn't necessarily a sign that we can't control our feelings or that we're not behaving properly. It's an opportunity. It's an invitation to feel the pain behind our anger, the hurt underneath it, and then to work to heal that pain, to reestablish a boundary that has been crossed, or to set right the wrong done to us or to another or to the world. I'd even go so far as to say that anger, when recognized and attended to, is not just a normal human response, it's also a vital part of our faith lives. It's a way we can invite God into our pain. It's a way we can wrestle with the great injustices of our lives and our times. It's even a way that we can rage against the one who can bear the brunt of all our fury and pain when it feels like we have nowhere else to turn with those emotions. Maybe it feels sacrilegious to be angry at God, but I believe it's okay and even a good idea to be angry at God. For one, it tells us that our relationship to God is important. It's worth expressing our feelings about. If we didn't have God somehow woven into our lives at some deep level, it wouldn't even occur to us to question or be mad at God. And if God is going to be at the center of our lives, the thing that sustains us, then we better be prepared to get mad at God. Whether you see God as the originator of all things, including the tragic and outright unjust, or whether you see God as the one who is always with us, sharing in all of our suffering, it would be shortchanging our relationship with God to not express our anger to God. Think of it this way. If you went out to coffee, or in these times, if you called up your best friend for a chat to catch up and see how each of you is doing, and you were really angry about something, really just sick over the way it made you feel, and then you didn't say anything about it during that conversation between intimate friends, there'd be something unspoken and cooped up as you tried to hold that back. And whether you were mad at your best friend because they caused the situation that's got your hackles up, or whether you're mad about something entirely unrelated, you'd want to tell that person. You'd want to bring all of who you are and what you feel, including your anger, into this relationship that you trust. Shouldn't it be the same with God, our primary relationship in life? I think when we get angry at God, or even just in front of God, in God's presence, we allow ourselves to stay in relationship with something, with someone, who will be with us in our anger and who will give us what we need to grow through it, to embrace other emotions and possibilities along with our anger. A mentor once shared with me another way to think of anger and God: to be angry with God, in the sense of letting God be angry along with you, next to you, at the pain and injustice in our lives. To imagine God raging and grieving alongside us over devastating loss. This is part of what our psalmist is engaging in this morning. After he rages, after he admits his pain, he asks God to be angry alongside him at the way his accuser did not remember to show kindness, but pursued the poor and needy and the brokenhearted to their death. In Bible study, we talked about how the psalmist comes off sounding a bit megalomaniacal. He's got some tunnel vision about his rage that might be disguising the ways that he is falling short. But if you've ever been just absolutely livid about something, just not able to see straight because you're so angry, then this psalm might feel familiar. I have to admit that I'm in the category Andy mentioned about having anger feel like a hard emotion most of the time. It's something I don't do a good job attending to in my life. But I felt some of that all-consuming rage twice in the last few weeks. And the first time was while watching the documentary 13th as part of the anti-racism study group. 13th is about the way the caveat in the 13th Amendment, which ended slavery, allowed for slave labor to continue for people who were convicted of crimes. And it's about the system that was built up specifically to exploit that loophole by criminalizing so many aspects of being Black, particularly being poor and Black in America, so that we would still have a huge unpaid labor pool to exploit. It was absolutely infuriating to the point that I couldn't sleep to know that corporate profiteers and politicians on both sides of the aisle knowingly crafted policies and laws that would make them money or preserve their power at the expense of the lives and the futures of God's flesh and blood children. Now, I see God as profoundly merciful and as having a deep compassion for those who cause suffering. God is able to see and care for what is so broken in them, in us, that we would lash out at others. God is nothing if not complex. And as we talked about before, God is also angry all over the Bible about breaking of covenant, about idolatry, about cruelty and injustice. And in our gospel reading, Jesus has come to earth in part to show us that God gets angry about many of the same things that we do: callousness, hypocrisy, greed, hatred, arrogance and self-centeredness, exclusion, abuse, oppression. I think that's where Jesus was going with his table turning stunt. I think his anger was motivated not just by the livestock sellers and money changers who were doing business in a place of faith, making money off of the pilgrims who had come to worship with a sacrifice at the temple, but also by the way they and the temple systematically abused the poor. Because the money that was changed into shekels in the temple courtyard was offered for sacrifice, honoring God, yes. But then that money went straight into the coffers of the priestly class, who used this huge accumulated wealth to run the temple, but also to loan at their whim funds to the desperate poor who had so little that all they could afford for the Passover sacrifice was a dove instead of the traditional lamb. It's a level of poverty that the livestock merchants were conveniently there to cater to instead of alleviate. I imagine that some of Jesus's anger was driven by the thought of what could have been done with those funds if they were shared amongst all those who lived in abject poverty instead of hoarded for the wealthy to use as they pleased, an abuse of power they cloaked in religious piety. As Dave noted during Bible study, Jesus's anger isn't the obsessive rage of the psalmist. It's not vindictive against a personal enemy, but rather it's strategic and it's channeled. It's aimed to dismantle this unfair system. The fact is that anger ignored or obsessed over can both turn toxic. And Jesus shows us a third way, a way to honor the harm that we or others have been done, to acknowledge it, and to turn it into action aimed at the healing and wholeness of all. As Maya Angelou says, you should be angry, but you must not be bitter. Bitterness is like cancer. It eats upon the host, and it doesn't do anything to the object of its displeasure. So use that anger, she says. You write it, you paint it, you dance it, you march it, you vote it, you do everything about it, you talk about it, you never stop talking it. I felt burning rage one other time this week. I was reading Michelle Goldberg's op-ed in the New York Times about the colossal, willful, and I would say sinful mismanagement of this pandemic by state and national leaders. It was calculated to do this. It started with a picture of a mostly unmasked crowd sitting next to each other with not a lot of space between them at a baseball game in Taiwan. Not because they were ignoring social distancing restrictions, but because they no longer need such restrictions. Many countries in the world are past the worst of their first waves, but we are not, and it's in large part because of purposeful inaction and misinformation. In the article, she writes that Lawrence Gostin, professor of global health at Georgetown, told me he doesn't expect American life to feel truly normal before summer 2022. 2 years of our lives stolen, she writes. Oh, that makes me angry. That makes me so angry when I think about how different things could be. And I have to say, like, I can feel my body getting angry right now just thinking about it. It does feel satisfying, if maddening, to let that rage just kind of burn, like the psalmist did. But after that, then I think about, what can I do with that anger besides feel righteously indignant about it? What can I do with the hurt that it is alerting me to that I might be able to somehow help fix? I think about Maya Angelou. I think about Jesus. And I think about John Lewis, who was an absolute master of turning his anger into strategic, powerful, world-changing love. There's a beautiful interview that Krista Tippett did with John Lewis 7 years ago, and I'll share this in the chat box in a moment, where he talks about the civil rights movement. And he says it was built on a kind of love that disarms the oppressor. It says, I acknowledge you as a fellow human being, and I am going to hold up the mirror of my own eyes until you see reflected back in them, until you see me as a human being worthy of love and yourself worthy of love. And something cracks open in you, and the you worthy of love becomes incapable of perpetrating this harm against another human worthy of love. I should be clear that it's just that first part that was the quotation from him. This kind of love disarms the oppressor, but the whole interview is amazing, and I encourage you to listen to it. I think about God meeting us in our anger at the pain we undergo, whether it's individual loss or social injustice. I think about God meeting us with compassion in our own brokenness and in mercy for the pain that we cause others and the anger that grows out of their pain. I think about love that holds up boundaries, love that dismantles injustice, love that is rooted in healing the wounds of the oppressed and those of the oppressor. And I thank God for our anger, anger that is the first step in that calculus of turning pain into healing, justice, action, and love. Amen. And now, go out into the world, go out into your lives, attentive to what makes you angry, attentive to the hurt and pain that is underneath that anger, and invite God into it. Invite God to meet you there in the mess and the rage and the hurt, to witness with you, alongside you, that pain, to receive your pain and anger if that's what you need to do, and to help you to turn it into something powerful and beautiful that will help heal you even as it heals the world. Go in peace.